Welcome to the author commentary for Star Wars From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. Here we go behind the scenes with contributors to discuss the creative process behind their stories. A word of caution, these conversations may contain story spoilers. I'm Alex Davis, one of the Del Rey editors who worked on this project. Right now we're talking to Alexander Freed, author of a story called The Man Who Built Cloud City. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Great to have you. So let's talk about King Ianthros Condorius. In this story, we're finally acquainted with King Ianthros Condorius the First, the true king of Cloud City. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this unique perspective that you have picked for your story and where the idea for the King of Cloud City came from?
Sure. So, you know, as happens with this sort of project, you know, figuring out who I was going to write about started with, okay, let's figure out every single character in the movie. And of course, you know, this being the sort of project it is, the first five or six, I was like, ooh, that guy. No, they were all taken. So, you know, I started thinking about, all right, you know, lots of people in sort of the crowd city crowd scenes. Lots of characters to choose from there, lots of interesting experiences in what they're going through. And the inspiration for Ianthros in particular was sort of, what if there was an Emperor Norton figure in Cloud City? Emperor Norton being a 19th century gentleman in San Francisco who proclaimed himself Emperor of the United States and Protector of Mexico, and who has been a rich source of inspiration for many novels and short stories from various folks over the last 150 years or so.
Yeah, I think I was first acquainted with him from a Neil Gaiman short story or something along those lines.
That sounds likely. Yeah, I actually, in preparation for this interview, I went and Wikipedia has an entire Emperor Norton in pop culture page that just, you know, goes on forever and ever. I mean, he's a fantastic sort of historical figure, and he, much like Ianthros, had his own currency that he would distribute through San Francisco. And you know, Ianthros is not Norton. They are distinct characters, and they are dealing with the distinct items. But the notion of, hey, you know, here's a character who is wrapped up in this sort of noble fantasy world that fits so nicely into Star Wars was one that kind of gave me the hook I wanted to work with.
Right. It's always really like fascinating to think about, you know, this is a universe where there's space magic and, you know, space monks with space laser swords. And where, you know, where fiction can go in a fictional universe like this. I mean, like beyond the Legends of the Jedi, really, we don't often see this sort of storytelling tradition, especially in Star Wars. Did that make it more difficult to approach the story that Ianthros is sort of telling himself about being this king and hobnobbing with these royalties? How did you approach the dream world of someone already living in a crazy space fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, to a large extent, this was a story about escapism and what it means to be sort of a over-the-top Star Wars fan within the Star Wars universe. You know, Ianthros is not, he does not resemble a real-world Star Wars fan in any sort of significant ways, but he is someone who is creating a fantasy world for himself out of the world that he sees around him, which is Star Wars. Thus, you were going to get the royalty and the political backstabbing and all the sort of wild things that is just everyday life in the Star Wars universe. You're going to get that taken to the extreme in his own mindset. I do think we see glimpses of storytelling tradition in Star Wars as a whole. It's always around the fringes, but you certainly get the impression that Luke has heard these stories of the rebellion and has this sort of outsized notion of what they're about when he's living on Tatooine. You get, of course, the glorious C-3PO in Return of the Jedi telling the story of Star Wars to the Ewoks in this sort of weird bombastic form. Like there are these nudges here and there that suggest that there is a storytelling tradition out there, but we don't see a whole lot of it actually on screen.
The approach you took to this particular story reminds me, and I think that's shared by other readers, there's a fairy tale or storybook quality to it almost. It opens and closes with this unidentified, separate, omniscient narrator who gives it almost like a whimsical, feeling. What influenced adding that framing device?
So the sort of fairy tale tone was very much one of the goals of the piece for me. This is, again, looking at it from sort of a metatextual sense of being a Star Wars story about Star Wars storytelling and the influence that Star Wars stories have on people and how deep one wants to get into it and where that sort of fantasy becomes something that emboldens and betters a person versus sort of becoming pure escapism. I wanted to have a level of remove from a normal Star Wars story. I wanted it to feel like, okay, let's draw attention to the fact that we're telling a story. And I wanted to play with the style that you see much more in kind of 19th century works, early 20th century children's books a lot. That sort of wry, like, little bit of a wink and a nod at the reader, but yeah, there's a narrator in there. And the framing device itself actually came because I was not sure if I had pulled that off sufficiently throughout the story as a whole. Like, all right, this is coming through a bit, but it's not coming through as strongly as I would like it. How do I juice this, right? How do I make this tone just clearly what people are reading, even in the moments where it is not coming through crisply every single sentence? And that's where the framing device came from. It was like, okay, you know what? Let's start it on this note. Let's finish it on that note. That'll encapsulate the whole thing, and it'll give that tonal strength to it, even where the text doesn't fully carry it off.
Oh, I for sure felt it. I could visualize this story as being, on a dusty leather-bound tome somewhere in a Star Wars library. I mean, now that we know that they have books. Thank you, Episode 8. So on the subject of you mentioned where it goes into something that could either embolden a character or a person or, lead to a sort of a harmful escapism. The conclusion of this story actually, I think, has a very interesting perspective on this. Yathros finding his royal assassin, Miz, and running off to go oppose the Empire as two true heroes. Would you call that ending ultimately a hopeful one, or would you say that it's a harmful delusion that Yathros is infected his companion with?
I mean, I think that is very much for the reader to decide. Like I've got a bit of an answer in my own head, but that's kind of what the story is about as at its core is this helpful? Like it certainly doesn't seem that way when we meet Yathras at the start. He seems, I think, more of a tragic figure than an empowered one. But the more we see of this tragedy occurring around these people, and we see sort of Miz going through what a reflection of what Yathras has gone through, and of course knowing where heroes come from in the Star Wars universe. I mean you have to ask the question of, are these people doing better for themselves and for their galaxy than they would have been if they had not sort of embraced these delusions, or are they really just making things worse for everyone?
It's really fascinating the shift that we see happen through the story from, Miz up here and Yathros sort of lost to it being the other way around by the end and them finding that common ground. Really.
That was one of the hardest things to make work. I spent a lot of drafts sort of tweaking that slope for both characters and making sure, all right, like where are these changes occurring? Like, are we seeing too much of early story Yathros at this point? Like, what are the cues that need to be in there? And it's delicate work, especially when you've only got a couple thousand words to work in. I love doing short stories, but yeah, there's a lot less room for error than there is in a novel.
Well, I think you really pulled it off on this one. This is one of my favorite stories in the collection. It's really fantastic stuff.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad there's at least one person out there who feels good about it. It was great fun for me. I really enjoy playing with different styles. I was very excited to get to do that kind of fairy tale storytelling and, play with this kind of bombastic character and even sort of put a little more humor in than I have typically done with a lot of Star Wars work. So, it was great for me to work on. If it actually works for anyone else, that's icing on the cake.
Well, thank you very much for coming here today to talk to us about it.
Thank you for inviting me.
And thanks also to our listeners. You can read The Man Who Built Cloud City and all the other stories in From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, available now from all your favorite booksellers in print, ebook, and audio download. Thank you, and may the Force be with you.